great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast hosted by Matt Perino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUP.com.
The Bills make me wanna.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Shout, a Buffalo Bills football podcast, coming to you at 1:22 a.m. on this early Saturday morning after day two of the 2024 NFL Draft. It is in the books. The Bills were very busy today, as expected. Three draft picks made. We're going to talk about a lot of them, Ryan. We're going to start with the wide receiver. They got their wide receiver, maybe one of the most polarizing players in this entire NFL draft. It's going to be fun to talk about. I guess overarching is a place to start. Well, first of all, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Like you said, some long nights here the last two evenings, and at least tomorrow starts a little bit earlier at noon, so we'll wrap things up a little earlier tomorrow night.
We will, and if you're watching on YouTube, we appreciate that. Late at night, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel as well. We're going to be live again, I believe, tomorrow after the draft. We will see, and then we'll obviously have that might be the wrap-up show, or maybe we'll have it on Sunday. Still kind of determining that. A little bit of housekeeping. May 17th, get it on your calendars. We're going to be at Wingnuts. That's our next live show. I'm pretty sure we will. That'll be the first show after rookie minicamp. So that'll be our first chance to get a peek at Mr. Keon Coleman. So let's start there. Keon Coleman, this is a guy a couple weeks ago we were talking about as a potential target. I'm pretty sure you put something out maybe around the time that he had his 30 visit about some, this is somebody that Bills fans should start getting a lot more comfortable with, start learning a little bit more about him. And as the draft kind of approached today, the smoke out there was that, you know, Coleman could be the guy. So the Bills take him at 33. They don't trade out of the spot. So that tells you a little bit about how much they wanted him and maybe the drop off after him. A.D. Mitchell was on the board. Troy Franklin was on the board. Ladd McConkey was on the board. This is a guy that, you know, hearing Brandon Bean talk about him today after the pick, they think is going to come in and add another dimension to their team, a true X receiver, which I think that was a little bit hard to project for McConkey, who lands in a spot where they can do a lot of different things with them in LA with the Chargers. First impressions of Keon Coleman.
Yeah, polarizing, just like you said, Matt. You know, everyone's going to have an opinion on this guy that actually suits up and plays with the Bills. The 40 time, I think, threw a lot of people off. And what's really funny is you and I were talking recently, and you sent me a link to a mock draft from late November. I don't know if you remember this or not. Mm-hmm. He was the fourth overall pick in that mock draft in late November. And now you have him going 33 overall in the actual draft. And it just goes to show you how much a 40 time at a combine may have hurt him in his draft stock and where he once was considered. And this was Tice off of Yahoo, who's very good at what he does. It wasn't like this was just some random one that we found on the internet. It was a well-thought-out mock draft. So the talent's there. He's not the burner. I think that's the first thing fans are concerned about. They went into this draft saying the Bills need to get some guy that can beat you deep. He doesn't have the blazing speed of the Xavier Worthies of the world. But what he brings is those X receiver qualities that the Bills were looking for after, you know, moving on from Stephon Diggs and losing Gabe Davis in free agency. He is someone that has an unbelievable catch radius. He is going to be a red zone weapon from day one. He doesn't drop passes. He doesn't have that the drop rate the Bills have kind of seen over the last few years from some of their receivers. So there's a lot of things that he does very well. And for anyone that's hung up about the 40 time, if you look at the way that he ran the gauntlet at the combine, he had the fastest gauntlet time. If you look at the route running, NFL Next Gen Stats had him around second in most of those routes that he ran in different drills at the combine. So he plays a lot faster than he looks. I saw it in the comments here too, Matt, a lot of people comparing him to Kelvin Benjamin and things like that. I've seen comparisons to Brandon Marshall. I've seen comparisons to some really good physical players that, you know, you get the ball in their hands, they're hard to bring down, they can make plays for you. And with a quarterback that goes off script like Josh Allen at times, I think that he's going to be a nice addition to this wide receiver room.
So the Kelvin Benjamin comp is a little lazy. I get the 40 time similarities, but if you really dive into the athletic profile of these two guys, completely different. I mean, I think there was a headline about Kelvin Benjamin at one point that he was a donut away from, you know, becoming a tight end or something along those lines. It was really like a nasty kind of thing about his body type and struggling to kind of stay at a certain weight. That's the complete opposite for Keon Coleman. I mean, he is an absolute physical freak of a kind of guy. Like he lives in the gym. I think there's some pictures that kind of went viral about, his thighs or something like that. Like he was in shorts at maybe the combine or a practice. And a lot of people were making comments about that. So I don't think you're going to ever get to a place where he's not in peak physical condition. And not only that, like the strength to be able to, he's much different profile. He's about 6'3", barely 6'4". Kelvin Benjamin was 6'5", almost 6'6". He was a much bigger kind of burly kind of player that didn't glide the way that Keon Coleman, if you watch some of his highlights and especially watch him at the combine, to your point, they're just completely different players. So I think that what I really like about this pick, and the more I learn about Coleman, is what did Puka Nacua do so well last year? I thought he had this fluidity to the way that he plays the position, with the way that he runs, once the ball's in his hands, like being a contested catch guy. It's not just about running 20 yards down the field, jumping up against the cornerback and winning jump balls. Of course, Brandon Bean said he could play above the rim. That's one of the things they really like about him. But the big piece of it, and why I think Rack's important with him, is being able to catch in, like, you know, on a 10 yard slant route, and you get bumped at the catch point, and you're able to withstand that bump, catch the ball, and then keep running for 4 or 5 yards, and that extra kind of stuff to keep the chains moving, to keep the your momentum moving. Those are huge plays. That's what I saw Nacua do all last year, and the similarities to their games. It was interesting a couple weeks ago. Brandon Bean was on the
who was Pat McAfee.
No, he was on with Kevin. He was on that. He was on with Kevin Clark from Omaha, the Peyton Manning podcast from the owners' meetings. And he went on about how the biggest miss that he's had from the last couple of years was Puka Nacua, and how that skill set, like, it immediately transformed the Rams offense. And I'm wondering, he didn't come out and specifically say that in Coleman, but maybe the similarities there between these two guys and the way that they play. Maybe not complete fits, because they're going to play him on the boundary X. And I'm pretty sure Nacua moved all around the formation. He was almost more of like that flanker role, played a lot of slot. I'd have to pull up the numbers here. But I think that's the vision. And he's only 20 years old, Ryan. That's another piece of this. That's very super exciting. You know, you're going to go to the negotiating table with him, and he's barely going to be 23 years old.
Yeah, so you're right. You go to the negotiating table, as long as he pans out the way that the Bills think he's going to pan out. And, you know, what's fascinating about him is the Bills really did struggle last year when it came to contested catches. That's going to be his bread and butter for this team. He's going to be able to get some of the jump balls. He's going to be able to go up and get the passes downfield when Allen needs a big play. The hands are there. I like his game a lot. And then we heard from Brandon Bean tonight, Matt, and Brandon Bean came out and said, we're counting on him to play, you know, some significant reps right out of the gate. This is our X receiver. So I think they're happy right now with their wide receiver room, knowing that they're able to add Keon Coleman. You get Curtis Samuel in free agency. We talked about the 90 plus targets he had last year and how it's probably going to be in that 100 target range with the Bills in his first season as well. Khalil Shakir, Dalton Kincaid, and the list goes on. So this is a nice fit. It's something different than what the team has. It's a true boundary receiver, and I'm intrigued to see how this all pans out.
John Falsetta brings up Cortland Sutton as a comp. Marquise Colston been one that's been thrown around. I believe that was Bucky Brooks who had the Colston comp on NFL Network, which, you know, these are all like the kind of player that the Bills just didn't have on the roster last year. Like all the things that Stephon Diggs does really well, like this isn't it. And maybe Coleman isn't this separator, right? But the draft's not over, Ryan. There's still wide receivers in this draft that if you want to try to find like a separator, somebody that can be somebody that wins in that short area of the field, there's still guys on the board. I know Troy Franklin's been one. There was a couple comments earlier in the thing. How is he still on the board? I laugh a little bit because I put out my first mock draft a little over a month ago, and I had the Bills getting Franklin at 60. And I had a couple of smart guys on Twitter say, 60? He's not going to be there at 28. And now I'm kind of looking at it like, that's the draft, though. Like, it's the same thing with Jalen Hyatt last year when everybody was like, he's going to go in the first round, doesn't go to the third. Like, there are guys that fall, and there's concerns about the body type for Franklin. There's other wide receivers still on the board. Javon Baker is another guy that's kind of hanging out there. So there's other options for the Bills to add, like, maybe a different flavor of wide receiver. Maybe somebody that, you know, maybe could long-term potentially fit as that number two role and somebody that can maybe separate a little bit more.
Yeah. So you mentioned Baker, you mentioned Troy Franklin, you can go deeper into the draft. Ryan Flournoy, a wide receiver from, I have to look it up actually, Southeast Missouri State. They brought him in for a 30 visit. He did a lot of 30 visits, ran a 4.40. He can kind of separate downfield. Devontae Walker out of UNC, a receiver that they did a ton of due diligence on. So there are guys out there still. They can add someone that can create that separation down the field to this wide receiver room. But once you got past Keon Coleman at pick 33 and you got to Buffalo's other picks, there was never really a wide receiver that stuck out on the board compared to players at other positions where it was a need and it was a fit. And the talent was better at safety and defensive tackle in the cases of Buffalo's second and third round picks.
Yeah, you know, one guy, a couple of guys that are interesting, and I think you had Jacob Cowing in one of your mocks, if I'm not mistaken, did you? Oh, no, it was maybe Joe Biscaglia. Joe Biscaglia had him in one of the mocks, and I thought it was interesting because he's more of a slot guy. Malik Washington, another guy out there from Virginia, another kind of slot guy. But, like, depending on how you view these guys and if you think that they have any boundary potential, if their main quality is separation, now you're starting to throw different skill sets into the room. I already think that, you know, from a separation standpoint, Shakir's underrated in that department, I think. And then Curtis Samuel, I mean, the speed and the quicks is what you brought him into this offense to be. And we still don't know what Justin Shorter is going to be. We know the athletic profile, but we don't know what it's going to look like when they get him on the field. So I'm very interested to see how the Bills address wide receiver on day three. But in day two, I got to be honest with you. Before we move to the second pick in the second round, let's go over like a grade for Keon Coleman, because this is a polarizing pick. And I'm not going to sit here and say that this is !! A+. They got the, you know, X of the future. To be honest with you, I'm kind of landing a little bit more at a B-C+ kind of
B- area is what I had.
Where I'm almost like, I see all the positives, but I also see the potential downfall. Some of the concerns that people are bringing up, that the inability to separate, you're going to be out on the boundary, you're going to be in that X spot, you're going to be facing a lot of press coverage. You know, the physicality is nice, but when you have to win with physicality over and over and over again, that projection is a little bit tough. But I also think them going with Coleman is another vote of confidence for Dalton Kincaid, which I think upticks this pick for me. Like, if this means that they're all in on really focusing around Dalton Kincaid in the offense, and they think Coleman's going to be a piece of the puzzle more so than they're looking to fill like this role that they need to be a wide receiver one bona fide with an exclamation mark, I'm for it. But I think I'm still going to land somewhere around a B-.
Yeah, B- is exactly the grade that I had, Matt. And let me preface this by saying I probably would have a B- grade for Xavier Worthy. Had the Bills stayed at 28 and selected him because of the, you know, the speed's great, but there's so many questions. Does that translate over to the NFL game, which we talked about yesterday? Speed is just one factor, and that does not always lead greatness in the NFL, as we've seen time and time again. Xavier Leggett, a player I was very high on. I probably would have had him in that BB minus category because 23-year, you know, older wide receiver prospect. Why'd it take so long for the breakout season? Questions there. What I'm getting at here is all those receivers from round, you know, end of round one in into round two, they all had the yeah, buts, I guess I'll call it. You know, he can separate in some cases for some of these guys. Yeah, but there's this factor. Keon Coleman, unbelievable in terms of the catch radius, unbelievable in a lot of areas. Yeah, but the separation is going to be the issue there. How does that translate in the NFL with the Bills? Josh Allen, though, was very high on this pick from what I understand, someone that he really wanted. Having that vote of confidence, having that confidence in Keon Coleman is a good sign. We did learn from Brandon Bean that Josh is going to be throwing with Keon Coleman and all the receivers here before training camp and the OTAs.
The one thing I will say on this pick is you hear Brandon Bean talk about some of the things that they liked for him, and he hasn't played a ton of college football. So he only had 3 years, right? Started at Michigan State, you know, as a freshman, and the stats and the opportunities weren't really there in year one. He goes and plays basketball for Tom Izzo, which is this unbelievable two-sport college athlete, plays in five games, had an injury. So they kind of backed him off a little bit there, and he decided to focus on football. Comes out, has a better year as a sophomore, and which actually might have been, I think he may have transferred. I can't remember the exact timeline of it, but he ends up transferring to Florida State, and that's when he really finally breaks out. And the thing they like about him is, like, what were we talking about? A guy coming into the Bills offense, complicated, being able to really take it in and understand it from the jump. He just had to learn a brand new offense this last year. So he's kind of almost like tailor-made for what they want to do there. Brandon Bean talked about his release package as you know, the quicks coming out off the line of scrimmage, like his ability to get to where he wants to go. There's also something out there that at his pro day, he ran closer to a 4.5 than the 4.6. Mm-hmm. And again, like if you look at his top speed in game from last season, I think it came in at the top speed of any draft eligible player. I can't remember if it was the exact next gen thing that kind of ran, but I don't think the speed is going to be as much of a concern as people think. And I do think the physicality and the chip on your shoulder. Keon Coleman was asked directly, what do you say to people that are saying that the quickness is going to be a problem? And he said, well, I never had a problem running by anybody. I never got caught from behind, and I never saw a cornerback sit down as I was running up on them, which means like, no, you know, that's what usually a corner will do. They'll sit on you and not worry about it if speed isn't a problem. Like, this is a guy that I think can make some plays, and I think that he's only going to develop more. This isn't just a 2024 pick. This is a developmental pick, and maybe 2-3 seasons down the line, that's when maybe he fully becomes that wide receiver one, or maybe a high end wide receiver two, and you go out and you get your wide receiver one in another way.
Yeah, and the physicality is going to be a big part of his game. I know he's talked about Curtis Samuel getting a lot of screen opportunities because that's been a part of his bread and butter, his skill set in his career. But Keon Coleman's really good too. You get the ball in his hand, he's hard to bring down. He can break those tackles. And then once you get him going, he's a tough guy to tackle. So they have a plan in place for him. He has the high football IQ. He impressed everyone pretty significantly on his 30 visit. First thing he does after he's picked the Bills, he calls his trainer. I'm going to come down next week. I'm going to, you know, we'll run some routes. That's the care part of it that you love in a player, the wants to get better before even stepping in the door as a member of this team. So I can see why the Bills were so enamored with Keon Coleman.
A lot of comments on Troy Franklin. Let's spend a little bit of time on that, because he's a guy that I mocked them at 60 in my first mock draft, and he is absolutely free fall here in the draft. And I thought he'd probably go somewhere early day or early round three. And we're sitting here at the end of the round and he's still not off the board. You know, one of the big deals with Franklin was the body type, right? Like, is he going to be somebody that struggles to stay healthy? You know, there's some nice separation stuff. His speed is more long speed. If you look at some of his highlights from last season in Oregon, you know, he got the ball in his hands. Nobody was around and he was able to find some open space. And that's when he's really like a gazelle in a lot of ways, right? Like he's just like absolutely running down the field. So I don't know if separation, like off the line of scrimmage, where I think that, you know, Josh Allen needs that easy button still at the line of scrimmage. That's what Diggs was so good at early, you know, those quick slant routes, flat routes, out routes. And then all of a sudden he falls. Cole Beasley was good in that way too. I think Coleman can be good at that in a different way. And I don't know if necessarily Troy Franklin offers that, like, you know, a guy like Brian Thomas, maybe a Xavier Worthy. A lot of people are like on the Xavier Worthy route running tree, but I feel like there's a lot of people that were critical of Xavier Worthy's route running in the scouting reports leading up to the draft. I mean, a lot of the draft evaluators that I really respect this time of year, Zuerlein, Brugler, Daniel Jeremiah, all had Xavier Worthy, I'm pretty sure, outside their top 30 prospects. So I think him going where he did wasn't really a super shock. And I thought a lot of that smoke coming in last minute was a little bit unfounded.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then in terms of Troy Franklin, you know, the body type is kind of the issue there, the frame. The route running is something there too. Yes, he has more of the speed there, but in terms of being a nuanced route runner, there's a lot of factors to it. But did I think he was going to get picked on day two of the draft? Yeah, absolutely I did. So there's going to be some really good players sitting here early on day three of the draft tomorrow. And I'm sure a few of them are going to go, but in such a deep wide receiver class, there's probably some prospects that teams like very similarly to Troy Franklin and Baker and some of these guys left on the board. So one or two could continue to free fall. It happens every year, unfortunately, with some of these bigger names at multiple positions. You know, the linebacker, Peyton Turner today. Was it Turner? Peyton? It's Peyton. I'm blanking on the last name now. It's not Turner.
Peyton Wilson. Willis or Wilson? Yeah,
Peyton. No, Willis. I think Wilson. Yeah. Yep. But, you know, he plummeted and it turned out that he didn't, you know, the knee injuries and everything else. But talent wise, he's like a first round talent. So players fall every year. You never know who it's going to be on a year by year basis. Troy Franklin, though, came in overhyped. It's very clear in terms of the mock draft community, sometimes seeing him in the first round, early in round two. Teams aren't nearly as high on him as the actual teams themselves.
I like Franklin in round four for the Bills if he's there. I mean,
sure.
I think if you could kind of add him at this point, you're getting a value pick and kind of reminds you in some ways of some of the guys that have gone in this spot over the years. I mean, we talk so much about Amon-Ra St. Brown. If you do that redraft, he probably goes in the first round, right? So you take a flyer on a guy like this, and there's, you know, a couple more names out there that I think are still going to be intriguing. A guy like Brendan Rice is somebody that I think, I think at one point there, people thought maybe around the combine, people thought he might sneak into the second round. He's still hanging out there. So a lot of wide receiver options still available. All right, let's get to safety here because, I was lukewarm on the idea of the Bills going safety on day three, just because like there seemed to be such a variance. What were you gonna say something?
Day two.
Day two. Sorry. Yep.
Yeah. No, you're good.
Yeah, it's late. it is late. So there was such a variance in terms of where people saw Cole Bishop, right? Where people saw him, where people saw Cameron Kinchins, who ends up going, I think, a few picks after Bishop. Some people had him going in the fourth. Some people had him going on the second. And I was always on the Cooper DeJean train, and the Bills had an opportunity to take him. And at a position of need, they demonstrated that this was a position of need by going with Cole Bishop where they did the Utah safety at pick number 60. What's made me come around on the pick a little bit is, number one, learning about the versatility. that he played free safety, strong safety, played in the box. He played the deep part of the field. They played him at nickel corner. I think that there is multiple paths for him to be a contributor in year one, whether it be winning one of the starting safety jobs or kind of slotting him into that special teams third safety role, bring him in on dime packages, let him kind of roam around, try to make plays. Brandon Bean says they think that he has more ball production in him than he showed in college. And I thought that he put together a pretty good college career in terms of the tackles for a loss, the sacks, I think he only had two interceptions, but more kind of meat on the bone. I think this is a player that they really liked, and they had the intel. He's best buds with Dalton Kincaid.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're a member of the text line, you knew about midway through the month here that the Bills had a lot of interest in Cole Bishop. He is a player that Matt just mentioned can play every safety position. The versatility there. Maybe my favorite part of his game, though, Matt, is how you could utilize him as a blitzer. He is really, really good in that role. And we've seen the Bills use their safeties and corners as blitzers throughout Sean McDermott's tenure. And, you know, Jordan Poyer, really good at it. Taron Johnson, some of these guys. I think he can help in that regard right out of the gate. I think he can compete for a starting job. But like you said, worst case scenario, third safety. We saw the Bills utilize Taylor Rapp at times in that way last year when everyone was healthy, getting him on the field. This is someone that's not just going to be a reserve bench guy. That's just going to be a special teams guy. He's going to play as a rookie. And the Bills clearly think that the ceiling for this player is very high and that he's going to eventually be, you know, a starter, if not right out of the gate as a rookie. You saw that call with Brandon Bean, with Sean McDermott, the excitement. They weren't going to get him. They tried trading up for him. No takers in that area. So they had to sweat it out, but they landed their guy. Sean McDermott, at the end of his conversation, of the video that they shared on social media, at least, is, you know, we've had a great history of safeties in here since, you know, I've been head coach, and we're going to coach you up. We're going to, you know, you're going to be kind of like that next safety in that progression in terms of those great players in Buffalo.
Thank you so much for watching super late. I mean, I can't believe how many people we get in these late night ones. Hit that like button on YouTube, subscribe to the channel as well. You know, Ryan mentioned the Shout Insider text line, and we've been so active in there this weekend. A bunch of people kind of flooding in, new subscribers, a lot of interaction back and forth. You can become an insider right now by texting 716-528-6727. Just send one text. Hi, how you doing? You'll get information back on how to sign up. 2-week free trial, $3.99 a month after that. If the text number doesn't work for some reason, a couple of people have issues with that, go to joinsubtext.com/shoutbuffalobills. You could do it from there. And the Shout text line is brought to you by Carrie C. Byer, attorney with the law offices of Francis M. Litro, located at 237 Main Street in Buffalo, New York. If you or someone you know is seriously injured, give them a call, 716-852-1234, or check out litrolaw.com. You know, the Bishop pick, Ryan, is interesting because there was such a need here for the Bills, but Brandon Bean is going to follow his board, right? No matter what. And I think it's telling that they invested in this particular player at this spot. And, you know, he said it was consensus inside the room. Everybody had a strong second round grade on Cole Bishop. And to me, that's another thing that really makes the pick pop. And maybe be an impact kind of pick for this season. And maybe why, you know, if you're Micah Hyde, do you see maybe Micah Hyde coming to a place where he almost comes back in like a coach role, like comes back on a vet minimum deal as like the fourth safety, but can play a kind of a depth role? The problem there is like you need that fourth safety to play special teams. Is he willing to do that? I don't know. We're probably still on the road to retirement, but I just think for Cole Bishop, like what a benefit that would have to have access to Micah in this first season for him.
Yeah, I'm leaning more so retirement for Micah Hyde, but here's where I think he could benefit Cole Bishop: training camp. We've seen veterans come to training camp, spend some time with the players there. I wouldn't be shocked at all if Micah Hyde calls it a career, if he still came to St. John Fisher for a few days. worked with Cole Bish, talked to him a little bit. And then what I think his plan would be, that being Micah Hyde, is stay in football shape. If the Bills lose a safety in season, he'd be willing to come out. He said it himself. I don't see myself playing for anyone but Buffalo. But the fact that he's he's still not sure of what he wants to do. I always say if there's that much uncertainty in your head, you probably should be leaning toward a retirement at that point. I know he can still go. I know he can still play. But I think that he could still benefit this team, a young player like Cole Bishop, in other ways rather than coming in being the fourth safety rate throughout the season. Coming in as that veteran, training camp, practice every now and then. And then if an injury happens, come in and then even help Cole Bishop even more in that regard, too, because then you'd be in the locker room with him every day.
Mm-hmm. Adam says, great work on replacing Gabe Davis tonight. What is the plan on for wide receiver one? I know this is kind of like a controversial take. Like, I don't think you need a wide receiver one. I think in a perfect world, getting a Rome Odunze, getting a Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. Yeah, you'd love to have that be the case, but I think that there's still so many other positions the Bills have to fill. And, you know, as you look into this next iteration, there's some guys that are going to age out of this thing even still over the next couple of years. Von Miller, Daquan Jones, like, you know, coming off of a season where, you know, he had battled through that pec injury. Like, if he's, you know, if this might be his last run through things, now you got to replace a defensive tackle. You got to replace a edge rusher and Von Miller potentially after the season. We'll see how it goes. There's a lot of players that you're going to need high-end picks to go and get. And I think wide receiver is important, but I also think that they have some guys that are super interesting in the collection that I think there's power in the collection. So I get the point that Adam's making. Like, I don't think that you're going into this season and writing in pen Keon Coleman down as wide receiver one. And who knows if he has the potential to reach that role. But even if he ends up being like a Romeo Doubs and a Khalil Shakir ends up being a Jaden Reed and a Curtis Samuel ends up being a Christian Watson, like, that's not bad. Like, that's a pretty good offense. And Jordan Love, you know, I think led the league or was near the top of the league in touchdown passes a year ago.
And we've regurgitated these stats. They were 6-1 over their last final seven when Stephon Diggs was not the focal point of this offense. They did need a number one receiver to win those games. They were in every single one of those matchups, including the loss to the Eagles in overtime. The offense was efficient. They moved the ball. Joe Brady had a good feel for in-game situations, and now he's going to – it should be even better with his own offense being implemented. They didn't just go into this – without a plan. And that's maybe one of my favorite comments is I saw a few on social media of Brandon Bean didn't have a plan for this draft. Like, yeah, he did. And the whole regime in Buffalo has a plan. They don't just kick up their heels and say, oh, let's just see how it goes. They wanted Keon Coleman for a reason. They wanted Cole Bishop for a reason. They have a plan. They're executing it. We may not like it, but there's been picks that I've been wrong about in my time as a fan, as a media, the member. There's been guys that I've been right about. Well, let's just give the players some time to actually get on the field and play before we judge them.
And it's not Madden either. I mean, like, there's so much that goes into these picks. And I feel like Keon Coleman, like, one of the scouting report notes that I saw was that this kid's had a chip on his shoulder and has been determined to make it to the NFL. And, like, hearing him talk about, like, what this day meant to him and, you know, ending his call with, you're not going to regret this pick, talking to, I can't remember if it was Pagula or Brandon Bean or Sean McDermott or whoever it was. I think it was McDermott, actually. You know, you feel what impressed them so much about him. And, you know, another note that I want to bring up on this, I asked Brandon Bean, one topic of conversation as Stephon Diggs was working with CJ Stroud and Tank Dell, all the pictures on social media and people were asking, you know, what happened to this? You know, back in 2020, Josh Allen had the entire offense together down in Florida. Apparently plans are in place for Josh Allen to get the offense, the receivers together at an offseason workout. The details, I guess, are still being worked out. But once they break the offseason program, this group, for the most part, is going to get together and Josh Allen is going to, you know, put his arm around Keon Coleman, whatever other young players that they add, and they're going to get ready to start training camp. And I think that's a huge note. I don't know if they did that last year. Apparently he was, he was on a retreat or something like that over the last couple of days. Dalton Kincaid, I guess, put something out there. Sal Capaccio was talking about it. But so they're doing the stuff that Josh talked about last week and building these relationships and getting on the same page so that they can get the training camp and hit the ground running.
And what was that quote from Keon Coleman that you wrote the story on, Matt, about the relationship with Josh Allen?
Oh, that's a very interesting point that we definitely probably should talk about. He was asked what he brings to the offense. And so he talked about his work ethic and he talked about being a true X receiver and doing some of the stuff that, you know, the hard stuff, being accountable. But then at the very end, he added in and making sure that I have a great relationship with Josh Allen. And to me, the reason why I wrote about that was that seemed like one of the main reasons that the Stephon Diggs marriage ended in divorce with the Bills is because for whatever reason, Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs in years 3 and 4 just didn't click the same way. Maybe there wasn't a falling out. Maybe there wasn't this great big drama that, you know, so many people tried to talk about, but there was definitely a disconnect. And Josh Allen said one of the things that they learned from the way that that storyline ended, that Diggs's time in Buffalo ended, is that, you know, relationships are important. Everybody has something different that makes them tick. And he's determined as a leader to learn all of those little intricacies and be the leader and bring everybody together. And you wonder if the Bills weren't adamant in during the draft process with all these potential receivers, like, all right, what are you going to do in terms of building your rapport, building your relationship with Josh Allen?
Yeah, and that's just it. Like, what did he say that made him stand out among the other receivers? Why did Josh Allen apparently want him so much from this draft class that is so deep in receivers? So they may not actually know each other right now, but it's already off to a great start in terms of that relationship, in terms of he wants to play with Josh Allen. Josh Allen wants him in Buffalo. You don't get off to much of a better start than that.
All right, let's get into the last piece here before we get out of here, because I'm going to try to go to bed, Ryan. Maybe I can get like 6-7 hours so we can get really ramped up. The Bills make these 7 picks tomorrow, man. Dude, that is going to be an absolute marathon. Yeah. We might actually put off the final show until Sunday. We'll see. Let's get into Dwayne Carter, who, by the way, if we're taking football out of it, like, obviously don't know much about him from a football standpoint. Didn't spend a lot of time on him. There was a couple other defensive tackle targets. Mekhi Wingo, somebody in the middle rounds that I looked at. Mason Smith from LSU was in my final mock draft. Even the kid that was in on a 30 visit. That you reported on. What was that kid's name?
Rook or Horhoro?
Nope, not him. The other one. No, he ended up going super high. He went.
Smith went pretty high. Rook went really, really high. No, like he was the first
from like North Dakota State or South Dakota State or something. Christian or I gotta bring it up. I should find it. I got them all up here right now, actually, because I was just looking up. Dwayne Carter. His name is Christian Boyd, Northern Iowa.
Oh, boy, yeah. So, he's still out there, though, right?
Yeah, he is still out there, and who knows? Maybe the Bills don't get out of the position. But Carter, one of the things, you know, the Bills, like, he's their DNA. Three-year captain there. Somebody that one of the main things in all of his scouting reports, never stops the motor. Dane Brugler wrote that he doesn't have any like difference making trait that makes him kind of stand out, but he does everything kind of well. And I think in this defense, he's going to be asked to be a rotational piece and that perhaps the primary backup to Ed Oliver. So if he can come in here, add some juice as a pass rusher, bring some extra energy, be somebody that's not a liability in the run game, I think he could find himself a really nice role. And he obviously has the work ethic. I mean, I feel like it's like the perfect marriage between player and team.
Yeah. And I see Spin in the comments saying Kyle Williams, and you know, those are big shoes to fill. But the three-year team captain thing, the work ethic, the never-ending motor, and how he hyped up his teammates because of that. A lot of those traits, yes, very similar to what Kyle Williams did during his stint in Buffalo. Like the player a lot. I had him as a fourth-round grade, so the Bills taking him at number 95 really isn't that far off from fourth round. They probably liked him. The defensive tackle position was thinning out a little bit, but you know, the person, Matt. I found him very entertaining tonight between the, you know, pausing a Zoom with the media, which you don't usually ever see, to go quiet his dad down. Specifically said his dad, a former, you know, college football player, was very vocal, very loud, and he left the room for a minute to tell them to quiet down. They still got pretty loud again toward the end, but took command of the house there. And we find out that he asked Brandon Bean, "What took you so long to call me?" Just a really, you know, fun personality. He seems like a guy that's going to be a blast to kind of cover. And then, like you mentioned, yes, you have Ed Oliver, you have DaQuan Jones. You need those rotational pieces because the Bills rotate at edge, at defensive tackle all the time. And this is another player that's going to come in, be a plug-and-play guy. NFL Network, though, did call him a three-down defensive tackle. So if that opportunity ever comes, or if, you know, they ever need to lean on him for more significant reps, the upside is there for him to be an every-down contributor.
6'2.5", I think 302 pounds. So maybe even a little bit of room to get a little bit bigger there as well. But yeah, if he ends up being a guy that you could put on the field in any situation, I think that's a really nice find. Seems like he, you know, just absolutely loves football. He's so energetic. I think he's almost like a perfect kind of person to add to that room. Like Jordan Phillips was this great enigma because you have the one guy on game day who literally last season, loved Jordan Phillips, but man, how much he actually did in games versus all of the crowd pumping up that he did, it wasn't equal. I mean, the balance was definitely off. He spent a lot of time getting the people going and not as much time in the offensive backfield. When he was at his best, he was such a really good player. But in the locker room, around the facility, Jordan Phillips was a real downer. So I think maybe, like, you know, walking around, like, he had this shirt that he walked around and it said, fuck them or something like that. It's late. This is after dark.
Right? Whoa.
After one time. He would just walk around with that t-shirt on in the facility. You know, he'd walk up to him in the locker room and he'd have to get him get him talking before he'd kind of open up and smile a little bit. So it was this great, like, you know, back and forth. I feel like Dwayne Carter is going to breathe such energy into that room. And Ed Oliver, in his own way, is a little bit of an enigma as well.
Yeah, 100%. I called Jordan Phillips like that Temple Owl. I don't know if you're familiar with Temple Owl, but he stands over on the sidelines of all the games. He just, like, flaps his wings from the start to the end, like, nonstop. That's kind of what Phillips did these last few years. He did hype up the crowd, but the play fell off. Carter is going, it seems to have an infectious personality, seems to be someone that's going to be great for that defensive tackle room. I think DaQuan Jones has been such a great addition the last few years in terms of his personality. He speaks highly about Austin Johnson. We know Ed can be a little bit, we know about his personality, but he gets along so well with all of them as well. So I'm excited to see what this looks like in 2024 and beyond.
All right, I'm excited to see what my pillow looks like, and I'm going to hit it hard and go to sleep in a very aggressive way here in the next few minutes. Thank you so much for watching. Hit that like button, subscribe before you go. If you're listening, if you found us on the audio platforms and you don't already subscribe, please do so. Maybe even leave a review. Why not? We appreciate all of your support. We'll be back with a couple more episodes in the coming days as we, you know, finish out this draft, take a look at what this roster kind of looks like, reset the deck a little bit, maybe take a look at some free agency stuff as we move in the next couple of months. And we'll be back, Ryan. Final thought.
Day three, maybe my favorite day, Matt, because as soon as the draft is over, UDFAs, love getting into that, finding out where they're going. Andreessen out of UB, keep an eye on him if he doesn't get drafted. I think he's a great fit for the Bills. They've had a lot of contact with him.
Very good stuff. For Ryan Talbot, I'm Matt Perino. We'll see you tomorrow or Sunday. Enjoy the rest of the draft. Take care, everybody.